listening to Am I the Bowlcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering that you're currently listening to. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza. You might know me from my article series, Am I the Bowless, from EDH Rec and Commander's Herald. Used to be on Commander's Herald, now on EDH Rec. Check out my stuff over there. We spun off a podcast, and now we do this. I say we because normally I have a co-host, Morgan Sanchez, editor and producer supreme over at EDH Rec, who is under the weather today, so I'm doing this one solo. Couple things are in the air right now, trying to figure out a way to get to you weekly instead of bi-weekly, and there have been changes to the idea that Twitch might be the way to go, so we are changing things up. We're talking about it. It's moving slowly, but hopefully we'll get to a point where episodes don't date themselves so severely as today's episode. I had a wonderful chat with an amazing guest. I know that I'm breaking the conceit of the show, but I have to say it before anybody comments on it. There's a lot of talk about going to MagicCon Chicago. There's a lot of talk about content that was published months ago. So forgive us for this massive delay of 3 months on this episode, on this interview. I will introduce the guest shortly. Before I do that, I just want to say thank you for your continued support. Every 2 weeks we drop an episode and people send very nice messages or they send in stories. And frankly, that warms my heart. I love it so much. amithebolus@gmail.com. If you have a story where you want to talk about a pet peeve or a story where you might have been the bolus and you're thinking, I don't know, I'm not sure, and you want me to weigh in, send that through. I think we're going to start doing a couple of those on the show, on the podcast, as well as the article series. I might just grab a few from there and revisit some older ones and think about how I feel about them now. The column's been going for basically nearly 4 years, you know, like, so we've got a lot in the tank and a lot to discuss. So hopefully we can pull from that. I do want to mention two things before we get into the interview. First of all, Cardsphere.com is our sponsor. As usual, Cardsphere, get your cards here, baby. Get your cards all already up on the site and start trading. Your cards are your wallet. You get up on there. You start saying, well, I'm going to put all these available for shipping. You set your minimums and, you know, you'll end up getting a message like, hey, somebody wants to buy these cards from you. And you put them together, send them off in an envelope, and you get your money in Cardsphere and start trading with that. With Final Fantasy on the horizon, with a lot of really, really, really cool, really, really cool cards that are in the set that are very strange and frankly make me feel like Wizards has been holding out on us with some of these designs. Holy hell. You're going to want to get up on Cardsphere and get your cards ready. So Cardsphere, get your cards here. Make sure you click on the referral link in the description of the YouTube video or the podcast info, wherever you're listening to. Please sign up for Cardsphere. You're going to love it. Check it out. Also, boneboxgames.com. Use promo code BOWLCAST for any of the deck boxes that you want to pick up. We were sent a decay box. We got Fresh Baked and the new tarot. I bought that one. So excited for that one. It's already the home for my Lazav Wearer Facers deck. It is honestly perfect for it. It's got like this ominous tone to it. The purple is perfect for the Dimir. I'm so thrilled, and I'm just staring at this Fresh Baked one thinking, I have no idea what deck deserves this beautiful home yet. So I'm excited for it, and I might just build a deck that I feel matches this vibe. It's so fun. We talked about it last episode. Check it out, boneboxgames.com. Make sure to use promo code BOWLCAST. Helps us out a lot, helps them out a lot, lets them know that we sent you. Means a lot. Now, we got a complaint last week that, oh, blah, 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 we skipped ahead and there's ads. Yeah, it's the reality of the game, buddy. I put time codes in every episode so you can skip ahead. Use them. I mean, it helps us that you listen to the sponsored stuff. It helps us that you listen to me and Morgan off the top, talking about shop, talking about whatever. But if you don't want to listen to that and you just want to get to the interview, there is a button that I programmed into the description of the episode on YouTube and your podcast app where you can just tap on it. It takes you to the time code and you can listen from there. So heads up to anybody who wants to, you know, give us some criticism and feedback online. Hey, it would help if you also made use of the things that we put effort into, right? So I've spent time, and I would hope that there are people that use that, and I also hope there are people who don't and just enjoy the show. Speaking of which, the Callous Dow Boys just put out a new album last week, May 16th, a week after my birthday, baby, and I consider it a little bit of a birthday gift for Mikey. One of my favorite bands put out a great album called I Don't Want to See You in Heaven. It is phenomenal. An easy contender for my album of the year. Just amazing. If you have any thoughts on it, I'd love to hear it. I'm easy to find at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza, on Blue Sky and all the other relevant apps like Instagram, whatever. And of course, Am I the Bullcast on Blue Sky as well. AmITheBullist@gmail.com for your stories. We're going to get into this episode right now. Our guest today called in a little while back, and essentially the episode was ready to go until there was some controversy in the Magic community, and we just scrapped that old episode and re-recorded for more recent times. So while I would have loved to just put out that last episode, that would have been from like a year ago instead of just 3 months ago. So we re-recorded an interview with him 3 months ago, because back when the bans were happening, not the right time to be putting out that episode. Our guest today is Alex from the Spike Feeders. Spike Feeder Alex, the golden voice sweetie pie from America, and makes his home in Winnipeg as part of the Spike Feeders collective with, you know, Jim LePage and Mads and Aaron and Bill and all that group. Amazing channel. You've already heard about them from us with the episode with Aaron. And I can't tell you enough. Just go support them. Get their merch. Check out their YouTube channel. Watch their gameplay videos. They're so sick. I really love them. So make sure to check them out online. And I'll see you on the other side of this to discuss a couple new things. But for now, I want to say it's time to chat with Alex from the Spike Feeders. Uh-oh, we got a caller on the line. Who am I talking to today?
Well, hi there, Mike. My name's Alex, and I'm from the Spike Feeders. You ever heard of Spike Feeders, Mike?
Oh, ever heard of them? Alex, buddy, it's good to hear you.
Likewise,
thanks for
buddy.
Calling in.
Yeah,
Mr.
Yeah.
Voice of Gold over here. Friggin' the smoothest sound in all of Magic, I'll tell you what.
Well, My levels indicator here is any indicator. I think I might have just peaked on that last one, but we'll manage that. I'll try to tone it down just slightly.
Yeah, we'll throw a compressor on there. We'll be okay. Alex, buddy, your background suggests you're in the middle of, I want to say, the Rise of Eldrazi, Battle for Zendikar times?
This is just Winnipeg winter out here.
Oh, my God.
This is normal.
Oh, that's not an Eldrazi. No, that's just snow atop another different kind of tentacled monster.
This guy, that's just a city worker. This is how we plow the roads up here, man. We can't do it otherwise.
Imagine looking out your window and you've got Artisan of Kozilek just plowing the sidewalk.
I mean, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I feel like there's a lot of space for, you know, lots of limbs to help move the shovels. You know, you can run a snow sweeper and make sure that you're cleaning off the sidewalks at the same time. What's to lose there?
This feels like Magic heading towards like a Pixar direction where we're world building, and or like the Flintstones where it's a living, you know. It's that's so funny. Now I'm wondering, like, what that is, like an untapped kind of avenue for Magic, which we kind of did get with Aether Drift, which is kind of like, okay, omen paths happen, what's the first thing? Crime,
of course.
Outlaws of Thunder Junction. But then you've got Aether Drift, which is like, hey, do you guys want to race? And it's just three different planes going, hell yeah, I want to race, you know, and that's fun as hell. I love that being the next development, but I do think we should get ourselves one where it's like, what's everybody's day job?
just a scenes from Ravnica after the omen paths open up. How's the tax office on Ravnica doing these days?
It's just an all Azorius set. It does strike me as like an interesting environment to be like, oh, Magic, but does a corporate power play? like you have to survive restructuring.
all the Selesnya workers wanting to work from Tree.
Ah, man. And the Gruul employee that sticks around, you're like, Ook surprise still here with company.
Waiting for smash options to vest.
Unbelievable. I do think it is fun to see the idea of like the regular world in the world building of Magic. Not everything, like obviously it's a game of like conflict and like a war nonstop, mm-hmm. but it is interesting to consider like we do get some bits and pieces here and there. And I do like what Unfinity did. So I kind of hope we do get a little bit more Unfinity, yeah. even though that in itself is a controversial take.
Well,
talk to anybody on the internet.
I would say I could do without the attraction decks and the stickers, but if you want to show me more slice of life in Magic, I think that especially the design that goes into the planes and the world building of Magic uh-huh. is one of its strongest suits.
Absolutely.
I mean, we could sit here and talk about my opinions on the lore forever, but you know, that's not exactly my expertise.
I'm with you, but I will draw the line at the attraction decks. Get rid of the stickers. Give me more attractions. I want more attractions. I love them.
Really? Really? Okay.
I've been dragging my feet on building a DK Finder of the Lost attraction deck only because I want to find a way to play him, her and Myra together.
Liking that makes sense. Yeah.
Come on, Grixis attractions. Let's get sickening, baby.
I mean, here's the thing. If you're already doing some wacky stuff, why not just do some more wacky stuff? Rule zero doesn't mean you can have just one thing going crazy. You know what I mean?
You're right. I should consider that my opportunity to explore rule zero. I don't have a rule zero deck.
As a person who has spent years developing my Assemble the Legion deck, I strongly recommend it. It's just like, what if I could just turn my brain off and put all the coolest cards I want in one deck? Why not?
That sounds fun. I think the closest I came was when this summer during Pride, they were like, you can partner any two legends.
Oh, yeah. Go I forgot about fun. That. Yeah.
And I was like, that's a fun exercise. Let's see what I can get away with Three Dog and Ariette. And that's a hell of a combo. So much fun. And I kept the deck together with Caesar at the helm from Fallout. And it's been fun, but it's the only deck I allow myself to run tutors in. To go get the real commanders.
Oh, right. I mean, especially if you're doing secret commander stuff, I don't think tutors are that bad of a thing.
Yeah.
Realistically, once you start getting at a higher power, I can understand why you need them to enable certain things.
Of course.
But yeah.
Of course.
No, I agree with you on the whole thing, though. Like, one of my precepts for casual deck building is definitely avoid as many tutors as you can.
Throw in more card draw. What's more fun than digging for the perfect card to get you out of the situation? The tension is palpable. You need a board wipe and you can just go get it because you have Demonic Tutor. Boo.
Yeah.
When you need a board wipe, you've got a full grip of seven cards. It's not in there, but you have ways to draw more. It's time to dig, buddy. Time to get everybody on board with help. Hell, run some of these assist cards or whatever. Get somebody who's playing Victory Chimes to help you out.
Yeah, there
Crack
you go.
Crack a couple clues. Dig, and then guess what? You pull the board wipe seventh from the top. Well, now you don't have the mana to cast it, but at least you got there.
Exactly. And it feels so much more fulfilling to have a story play out as opposed to, I have activated my Yugi card, therefore I'd use Butt of Greed to win the game. Like,
that's not what that card does. My friend sends me that video on a regular basis as though the entire history of our chat isn't him sending me that video, me reacting to it, him sending a clip of Boondocks, and then that video again. And I think it's the perfect meta way to enjoy that Pot of Greed video.
Oh, yeah.
Is just keep sending it. He's brilliant. He's not a comedian, but he's very funny. I think he's nailing it.
Yeah, you gotta be funny in all sorts of different ways. And if one of those ways is just repeating the same joke over and over, heck, that works, right?
I mean, the Family Guy uses that still to this day. I wouldn't know about this day, but I'm pretty sure they do it. Alex, buddy, tell me, what's going on with you? How you been?
Doing fantastic. We're doing well up here in the great white north of Winnipeg. We're settling in for some I'm personally excited. We got a lot of things going at the Spike Feeders headquarters right now. We did our first full year as a corporation this year.
Gorgeous.
We've got ourselves set up for six games a month of gameplay, plus a secret seventh game if you're on the patron. There's a whole bunch of stuff going,
That's
and I feel like we're
games.
Putting out a ton of content at a high quality with good stuff going. Between Madison doing some of the best merchandising I've ever seen, Aaron bringing in new brews constantly, non-stop. Everybody on the team just working their tushes off to bring good content day of filming, we got a lot of good stuff going. And we just this past week booked in a collab that I imagine, based on your production timelines, is already maybe even out at this point. And so we're really excited. I get to play with Iffy Wadi Way next month.
Oh, yeah, buddy. Yeah, Did he come up to Winnipeg?
He'll be coming up here in a couple of weeks for us. So, yeah.
That's sly dog, I swear to God.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
I'm going to see if I can convince him to take a little trip out east after all that.
I don't think it'd be that tough. I know he's
already in the country.
I would say he's already flying out on the last day to something, but it is out east, I think. But I don't remember the details.
One of his best friends lives in Toronto, so I think we could make something happen. All right, I mean, go check out Spitefeeders playing with Iffy Wadi Way. That's fun, man. Iffy popping up in Magic is a lot of fun.
I just think he's one of the best guys I've run into in terms of like a famous guy that I've met in person, because he's just so genuine. Like, as soon as he saw us walking up, he's just like, "Oh, hey guys, how are you?" And as soon as we told him that we made content, he's like, "Oh yeah, what channel are you? Oh, I've heard of you guys."
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
So, I definitely a model to follow if you're in this kind of business.
Totally,
I think.
Totally agree. He's always looking out for people, and that's important to know. If he's a good egg, he is a really good egg. That's exciting, though. Six games, seven. We're counting the Patreon, too.
That's right.
Seven games a month. That's a lot of games.
Yeah. Lots of people working overtime, that's for sure. We got really lucky to find an editor who can work with us primarily. That's Phil. Beauty. You've seen him on the show.
Yeah,
Phil. He's been brilliant. He took to editing like a duck to water, or a snowplow to a street that isn't in Winnipeg. And, just live in the dream, honestly. It's been really nice because Jim and I used to be the primary editors for the channel. And frankly, doing that as hour 41 on your work week, it's a little rough. And so finally, he and I have largely been able to pull back, and we're doing much more reasonable amounts of, additional work, as opposed to here's an additional job. Congratulations.
Right. Yeah.
And so, and honestly, I just got to thank all of our fans for that. We've been wildly successful this past year, and we're really hoping to keep that up.
I hope it keeps trending upwards like this. You guys deserve it. You put in so much work. You guys put out such great stuff. Like, the games are dynamic. You never feel like the table is just, you guys are all so, you all love each other so clearly. And you're always clowning on each other and having a good time. That's what makes the game so easy to watch. Like, there's that. And then on the other side, you've got, on the opposite end, you've got Mudsta, whose videos are like, there's no chatting, or very little. Sometimes I'll throw in a video or a little clip of it, but it's like, this is to the point. But when I got the time to like stretch a little bit, I'm popping on Spitefeeders. I'm checking out who's got what deck that I was thinking about, maybe building. Yeah. It's always fun to see Aaron's take on a new legend. I'll tell you that much.
Exactly. That's one of the best things that we've found about working with Wizards directly is since I was a child, have not been able to replicate that feeling of I'm going to open this pack of Magic cards and I have no idea what's going to come out of it. Oh. But for the past year, getting early access to product and sets has us just going, oh, this is what this is. Oh, this is how this mechanic works. Oh, how does this mechanic work?
I have to say that because of the work I do, I got my job. I have the ball cast, but then I also write Am I the Bolus over on CommandersHerald.com. And sometimes I'll write a set review. So, a new set comes out, I'll be one of the writers who writes a set review. And so our Discord channel for work is always popping off. Like, here's a new card. Here's this spoiler. Here's this one. This is out. This is out now. What should we do this? Okay, Mike's reviewing this. Let's send it to him. So I just had a moment with my friend at pre-release where I was like, I kind of wish that I could go back to a time where at least one set I can sit down and just open the cards and not know what's in the set, which is what's making the unknown event very, very tempting in Chicago.
If you haven't already bought it, I would strongly recommend it. It is the only event that I go to with those.
I do miss the idea of like opening a set that I've never seen anything from.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Gavin's event is that in spades.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I want. We'll see. I hope I can do it. I'm fingers crossed the whole way. That said, Alex, I know you're not calling just to catch up and hang out, which would be nice if you did. Well, call me.
I'm sure we can arrange another game sometime. But
we had fun. Yeah. We had fun with that game. Non-content games with folks that are in the sphere. That was nice. We did that with old Proxy Lab and Veggie Wagon the other night, and that was a really nice time. Here's to more of those, buddy.
100%.
I like you a ton. I think that's important to be said. I'm so glad that we're doing this and that you called in.
I'm especially glad I've been able to trick you into liking me. Let's see if I can flip that script here really quick. Because the reason I called in.
Flip it. Yeah.
The reason I called in, Mike, is the other day I was sitting there wondering to myself, why do players play Magic so slow?
Ooh.
How do you get around, especially in a commander game, to your own turn and seemingly have no idea what you're doing, no idea what anyone else is doing, and not a darn clue about what the cards in your hand are capable of doing? And so what I wanted to talk to you about today, Mike, is how can I get the people I play with at the LGS or the people I play with at the Spike Feeders, or hell, just the people I play with generally. Sorry, Ken, I don't know if that's a swear word around here, but if it is.
No, that works.
I'm going to say hell a lot more.
Yeah. Just for fun, I'm going to say
Oh,
sorry, Ken. We're going to get that in there. All right. Sorry, I cut you off. Please.
No, I just want people to play faster. And be faster. Part of it is I understand that there's a number of reasons why you might not play fast. If you're new, you drew a bunch of cards, there's a confusing board state, you're playing CEDH and your name isn't Comedian. I get it. There's a lot of reasons why you might not be able to play super fast. And I have a lot of patience for those, especially for new players.
Sure.
But what I don't get is when I've got two cards in my hand, and it's turn 7, and I know for a fact that I can either attack this guy, remove a creature, or concede as my three options. I got to pick one of those three, and it doesn't really matter what I draw. Or at least, it doesn't matter much what I draw. And what I see a lot of people do is they draw that card, and they go right back in the tank, trying to will a different option into existence. And that's what I get confused by.
So this is a pretty spicy pet peeve. This is interesting. I mean, to be fair, when somebody draws a new card from their deck, it is 2025 Magic. Let's be real here. That card's probably got another side and has their font reduced considerably to fit more text on it.
They got one of those Yu-Gi-Oh! Extendo cards where you have to pull the back of it out to get all the text on it. Yeah,
exactly. And then you've also got like you have it's an extended art card on top of it, so it doesn't have the reminder text for the mechanics, the new mechanics that weren't repeated or brought back. To be fair, when that happens, I got to get on board with somebody taking a little bit of time, but it isn't. Sometimes you just draw planes and you kind of look at it going, what do we have here?
Well, and that's just it. I'm not trying to be unreasonable about this. If you want to take 20 seconds to plan your turnout and then take all your actions, you and I are best friends. What I've got a problem with is when you've had three turns of time to figure out at least a general strategy for what you want to do for the turn, and then you got to take another 3 minutes to get to the point where you've decided that. That's where I start losing interest in the game.
Right. I hear you. I'm with you on this. I will say, I need to hear your take on, say, let's say I am someone who builds an engine deck all the time. That's my style. You've seen me play this kind of thing I get like 6 or 7 cards out on the battlefield and I go, now we're cooking. The possibilities are endless. And sometimes they really feel like they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I start to play things out and I go, okay, hold on a second. I have to math out. If I do this, 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 and this, then this, right? I feel like, is that more acceptable to you? This seems like this is information that's being brought in and then calculated on the spot. And that's fair, right? That's not what you're talking about.
Not only is that fair, but if you tell me you're having trouble with that, I'll help you beat me. I will show you
that's what I want.
What's going to happen. I will even tell you about the responses I might have. Just because if you're playing that kind of thing, I know that the valuable part to you isn't doing the math. It's showing the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super on board, same page, whole nine yards. What I have a problem with in that scenario is when you're struggling. You know it's a friendly game, so we're not playing for $300,000 or, you know, a belt or something. Mm-hmm. And you don't even ask for help. Now, if you want to do it yourself, you want to figure it out yourself, that's perfectly fair, fine. I get that. But when we're getting into minute 2, minute 3, minute 5 of you trying to figure it out yourself, maybe your table doesn't want to be that helpful, but especially at my tables, I want to be that helpful. I want us all to have a good time. And if I'm sitting here on my third anecdote and I'm starting to run out of yap to yap about waiting for your turn to happen, then we got a problem.
Okay. I hear you. I think what's interesting is you said you want to be the one to help. I feel the same way. We were both similar in that game we played where we're both the trackers at the table. Mm-hmm. We love to be like, okay, it feels like you're moving ahead. Don't forget this counter that you have on this thing. Would it be beneficial 100%. For me to not tell you because that's a May ability? It would be, but I'm not here to play that game. I'm here to play the game of Magic the Gathering where we're all friends and having a good time.
Exactly. If there's one thing that playing for content has taught me in spades, it's that I'm not just responsible for my board. I'm responsible for this game.
Yes. And it has to be fun.
Precisely. And yes. I think that's something a lot of people don't necessarily ingest until they're fairly deep in their careers as Magic players, especially in Commander. If you didn't come from a competitive mindset and an environment, there's not necessarily that same thought to how is this strategy playing out? What are my options? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that, you know, people who've never played competitive Magic are like deficient in any way. Obviously, that's not what I'm getting at. But what I'm getting at is there's a couple of skills that you pick up in an environment where you could literally have somebody in a black shirt come up and go, I'm going to need you to take a game action. Otherwise, you're going to get a penalty. Yeah. Right. There's just a different way that you ingest information versus if you're sitting around with your buddies drinking beer and eating Cheetos. And so my point is you can take some aspects of what they got over there and apply it to how it works in the Commander game. And one of those aspects is keeping in mind what your actual viable options are. Because here's the thing, I might have a 1-1 on my board, and he could technically attack on turn 7. Right. But it's not going to do anything 99.9% of the time. So that's just a blocker. As far as I'm concerned, that piece of cardboard is blank. It just says, yeah. I block something that doesn't have trample.
Nice. Yeah.
And so I wonder if there's people that maybe don't simplify things that way.
I wonder, so this is bringing up, so to me, it's similar to one of my lower tier pet peeves because this is I think you're going to agree with me. The people who don't plan their turn while the game is happening. Right. So this is contributing to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But the people who will play their turn and kind of, you know, not think about it or chat and talk or whatever, and new information will come up and they won't register it, like somebody played an Avacyn. Or they're, you know, and then they come back to their turn and be like, okay, I'm going to beast within your thing. You're like, wait a second. When did that come out? You're like, oh, now I got to rethink what I was going to do. It's like, no, you got to be paying attention. And then also think about what you wanted to do that whole time. If you had the mana open for a beast within, you got to keep your eyes open.
Words like Avacyn should make you perk up and go, oh, that's one of those conditions that I should use a beast within on, or, you know, something like that, right?
Yeah. Or in my case, like a rest in peace, in which case I get upset and I call the police.
and don't be wrong. I'm not trying to say that as if you're a new player, newer player, started playing the game recently, none of these things are really applying to you. What we're really talking about is the invested players who've been playing a long time who still have these habits.
The folks who are like, this is my regular Sunday night game with the pals. We're getting set up. You know, we have a full pod. We might even have a fuller pod than usual because Liam could make it, right? Mm-hmm. We got five of us hanging out. We decide to play whatever variant or we're still free for all. And yet when it comes around to, you know, my turn, I'm ready. I know what I'm doing. And then we come back to Chris. And what's Chris doing? Oh, Chris was on his phone. He missed that I played shoulder. He didn't even sacrifice a creature. Okay, yep. Well, we got to talk about that now, you know, and of all people to pick in my playgroup, Chris is not that guy, but
right. Yeah, no, I tell you which of the spike feeders slow plays the most often, but we cut all that out. So no one would believe me even if I told you.
Yeah, the editing is very tight on the show.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's definitely some reasons why some folks get edited down tight. But anyway, my point here is there's ways for you to avoid needing to have this be a problem. Right. And I think it's exactly what you're talking about. It's not just paying attention, because you don't need to pay attention to everything. If I'm a graveyard deck, I don't necessarily care so much about stuff getting milled, right?
Right.
In fact, that might help me.
Exactly.
Yeah, and similarly, there's pieces of your deck that you just need to know enough about what you're trying to do to know what stops it, right?
Agreed.
And similarly, you also need to know about what makes it go. I find it really strange sometimes when I'm watching, especially content, when we get close to the end of a game,
yes,
and you can sort of tell there's a player in a dominant position, and you can sort of tell that everyone's like, well, if I don't stop this, we're going to lose the game.
Exactly.
But the thing that gets strange to me is I never see those folks call out what they're looking for, or at least I very rarely do.
Right.
And something that folks might notice, or you might notice now that I say it, is I actually tend to end a lot of games on the channel by forfeit.
Okay.
I tend to end a lot of games on the channel by concession when it's just me and one other player, especially in casual games, because in my head, I've already mathed out either there is something in my deck that fixes this, or there is not something in my deck that fixes this. Uh-huh. Now, there was actually a game on the channel recently where I literally said, I'd like to propose a tournament shortcut where I draw a card and see if it's anything that changes anything. And if not, I'll concede. Drew the card and then conceded.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the mindset that I find strange isn't more common in Commander generally, but also especially amongst people who have been playing the game for a long time.
I'll tell you, we do that in my playgroup. We do a little bit of a... let me check the top card of my deck and see if it's something, you know. It's not, I'm not drawing it. Let me just check the top card. And it's gotten, we've done this enough where, like, every now and then we'll be playing a longer game and Max is doing his math around his life gain shenanigans. And he's like, I think I have it. I just have to figure this out. Like, I have to pick who's going to take these ones and who's got this one. You know, he is figuring it out. It's the game winning turn. He's taking a while, but he's looking. And Eric just peeks at the top of his deck without telling anybody. He just, like, peeks at it. He's like, all right. Yeah, he knows. It's the same thing. So I'm right with you. I think it is interesting that that kind of thing is not come to be more common, I think, especially among other playgroups. But then again, how much experience do I have with other playgroups? They're not my playgroups, and I can't tell. Maybe, you know what? You're listening to this. If your playgroup does this, amithebolus@gmail.com, let us know. Sound off. Let us know. It's helpful to find out about this stuff. I'm really curious about this. Like, if you're behind, it's a long game, something like this, this exact situation comes up. Really like to know about this. And I'll share that stuff with you, Alex, because I'm pretty sure maybe turns out it is common. Maybe it is something that people do.
Absolutely. And I know a couple of weeks back, I was sitting around on Blue Sky and I thought to myself, man, I should really start preparing for this exact interview. And so what I asked was, people who don't have their next turn planned out in a Commander game, why not? And I just said, just tell me. I'm not trying to judge. I'm not trying to be down on anybody. But, like, what's going on that you can't get there doing things? Mm-hmm. And I got a ton of different responses. It was everything from trying to take care of other people too much with rulings and focus, from trying to chat a little bit too much because you're just there to hang out. And honestly, if that's the vibe at your table, that's the vibe at your table.
Totally.
But I think deep down, especially if you're the type of person who's going out and playing with random folks, if you're going to these Magic Fests, if you're going to the LGS, having your turn ready to go and having an idea of what you want to do is probably better for you long term. Because what you're going to get is you're going to get more involved with the game. You're going to notice more things because you're trying to do the mental math to get there.
Exactly. Even if it's just planning what you want to do next, it doesn't mean to be, you know, let's say I have a, you know, I'm playing a Sultai deck and I've got like three lands and I need a fourth to get my commander out. And I'm thinking, what'll do that? And I have Steve that's just up because I need a blocker. And I think, okay, well, next turn, at the end of this turn, I'm going to sack Steve and I'm going to play my commander. But you can leave room for, like, hey, I drew this thing that's going to double my mana, or I drew this Solemn that's going to get me another land, and maybe that's better for me now than playing my commander. Just having an idea of, like, I'm going to do this so I can play my commander, or I want to play my commander, what's going to help me get there? And just being able to think about that while the turn order is coming around, because maybe somebody plays a Rites of Flourishing or something, you know, that
exactly.
or like a Tempt with Discovery, and you're like, hell yeah, I'll get tempted. Let me go get this friggin' Nykthos or something, you know?
Yeah, because that was about to be my next point, is that a lot of what people also said is that there's all sorts of other people's stuff happening, and it ruins my plan, or it interferes with my plan. And I guess what I'm getting at is, just like you said, you still need to have something in mind that you're working towards, because either it stopped it, and that's fine. Now you got to figure out something else. I get that. But more of the time, it's more of a, that tweaked it, or maybe this isn't the best anymore, or maybe I need to take a step back. And honestly, my opinion is, especially when you're playing casual Commander, it probably doesn't matter. You can probably just jam whatever you've got. If you've got a spell in hand that you can cast, or better, two spells in hand you can cast, just cast them.
Yeah.
Just do it. Do it. What's going to happen?
Doesn't make sense. Have some fun with it. Yeah. See how these cards interact with each other. So I put together this deck like a couple months ago where it's a Jeskai Legends, and I'm trying as hard as possible to not have any permanents that are not legendary, or as few as possible. So it's like a historic build. It's got the Stranger Things guys. So it's like a Lucas and Hopper, the Bjorna and Sofina. And so it's just like Jeskai Legends, Goad. Let's just see how they all go. and they're just a bunch of legends I really like and think are cool, and I'm just putting them in the deck. And I'm kind of like, this deck is silly. I'm going to have maybe 10 non-legendary permanents. Go with God. Let's have some fun. So I just, yeah. I'll play and I'll go, okay, this, you know, I've never played this creature before. Throw it down, you know? Okay, yeah. I have my Joyra, Weatherlight Captain, I think that's the name. The one that draws you a card every time you play a historic spell.
That sounds right, yeah.
Okay, great. Here we go. Joyra's out. Now I'm just going to play everything I have. See where it goes.
Right, exactly.
That's the plan. Just have fun with it. See where... Oh, the new breaches from Outlaws of Thunder Junction. The one that says you cast your second spell, you can copy it if you sack an artifact or something or other. I've never gotten it off. I've never gotten to play it. I've never gotten to work. I'm going to play it first and then play a second spell. Yeah, they're all legendary. If I copy it, it's not going to do anything.
Exactly.
But whatever.
But you're having fun, and that's 99% of the game. And so I just, from me to everybody who's out there in the tank, it's okay to go in the tank. I go in the tank too. I'm not trying to say it never happens. What I'm trying to get at is there's space for you to figure out enough of what you want to do that you don't necessarily have to think and read and agonize over every choice that comes up. Because I think there's a lot of folks out there that, and I've heard it from folks on the show, people that we film with, guests, and not even spike feeders, who get in their head about playing on camera especially. They get worried that, I'm going to make a suboptimal play. Mm-hmm. YouTube comments are going to come for me. Oh my gosh, if they see what I did, that's going to be the end of it. And I mean, aside from my antipathy towards the average YouTube commenter, we'll hold that aside for the time being. It really just isn't that important. We're not playing for the belt. No one's going to click off the video. Well, rather, no one whose opinion I personally care about is going to click off the video because of misplays. You know what I mean? And so,
yeah, man.
I think there's a lot of space in the space to model different ways of approaching the game, and I think the best model I can provide is just do stuff. Take your 10 seconds after you draw your card. Read it. Understand it. Did it change the plan? Yes or no. Is the plan still viable? Yes or no. Start acting.
I still think there's something to be said for the kind of preparation that... So first of all, if you're prepared for your actions on your turn, you know your options, you've read your cards, you know the board state. If something new comes up, it takes you less time to assess what's happening and what you can do about it.
Exactly.
Then also, when it's your turn, if you haven't done any of this preparation, you're kind of thinking to yourself, oh man, I'm taking a long time. I'm taking a long time. Oh no, I'm taking a long time. And so that's extra agonizing because you're like, what am I, now I'm dragging the vibe down. And so this also mitigates you becoming that person. And again, we're not saying that that's a bad thing. Like, for sure, if somebody's like the turn before yours, they play like that Kadama that drops a bunch of permanents and then they just go off and they're like, okay, pass. And then all of a sudden it's your turn and you have 6 new permanents to read on that board. Read the permanents. Take your time to like get acquainted with what they do with each other. And also, like, if you draw a card that does something, read the card. Enjoy the game.
Yep, but this isn't about you're bad if you take time.
No.
The thing that I've got to quibble with is how can you as a player in the year 20 and 25 not have a deep enough understanding of the game, your deck, or the board state to need 2, 3, 4 minutes on a turn 6 draw?
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of behavior I'm talking about. And as you said, with the internal apologies, we've had it on the show. One of our players, we had a chat with them, and it had to be, we need you to stop apologizing for playing slow and just play. Mm-hmm. We need you to not worry about the fact that you've taken time in the tank. Just figure it out and come back and play. Because the more time you spend doing those types of things, the more disengaged the players around you get. And this isn't to try and demonize you if you're being slow. I get it. It happens. But everyone else's enjoyment is also predicated on doing stuff, on being active in the shared activity. And don't get me wrong, banter can cover for a lot of things. You've seen me when I play. Am I jawing and jacking and talking all the time? Absolutely. But at a certain point, even someone as loquacious as I am runs out of things to say.
Oh yeah.
And that's where we start running into problems.
Definitely. I think, how do you mitigate that beyond asking yourselves those questions that Alex mentioned? So you mentioned, you know, spend the time before the turn, know what you're looking for, what'll get you out of something, kind of be ready to just play. but also goldfish your decks. Like, mm-hmm. if you have the opportunity to do so, if you're not just showing up somewhere and being handed a deck, or, you know, you don't have all the time in the world to really goldfish a deck, you know, if you do have that time, take it. Some of my favorite time spent at my desk, oh, I just got off a work call and I don't have anything for like another 20 minutes. I'll pull out a deck. Let me see what deck I'm most excited to mess around with. And then you get to goldfish your deck. One of the most satisfying things to do, and I understand it's right here next to me. I've got my ninth Doctor Clara Oswald Grixis Upkeeps deck, which I'm not bringing with me to Chicago this time. I brought it last time, and then Obeka was announced at the the con. But essentially, this deck is one that I have a lot of fun with, and I really enjoyed. But part of that joy is putting it together and then goldfishing it to understand how would you stack your upkeep triggers when you have six upkeeps and four upkeep triggers to stack. So, like, which one's more beneficial for you? You understand your game a little bit more when you have the opportunity to just kind of lay it out and kind of thought process your way through, like, okay, this is supposed to go on the stack and I get to choose it.
Absolutely, because it turns out your second through 15th rodeos are a lot easier than the first one. And so if you can have those experiences before you even sit down to start playing the game, that's exactly how to do it. Like, just as an example, every time we're not literally being handed precons, the expectation on our show is that we've gone and we've playtested. We've loaded it up on the deck building site. We've gone into the playtester and we've looped through. By the time I've been handed a deck to play on the show, that especially brews, like those, I've already looked at anywhere north of 20 first sevens, and I've probably played to turn five or six at least 5 to 10 times.
Yeah, and that feels like on the low end even. Like, that exactly. feels like when that, you're that, in the
that's
rush.
Like
yeah.
short prep.
Yeah, and so I think we've covered some way to get around what your pet peeve is, and kind of covering what'll make for. And of course, we've covered the reasoning behind why it's a pet peeve. You're making it very difficult to make a case other than you're not the bolus for having this opinion. It's very, you know.
So I'll be happy to argue against myself, and here's why.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I actually do think that there's plenty of room to play slowly. I think there's plenty of room to take your time. I think there's plenty of room to do those things. But they all require buy-in. I think what I'm talking about is how you should try to behave, try being the operative term, amongst strange people. If you're just out in random wildlife, getting paired up at a con, walking into your LGS, you know, without any other context, I can see a huge argument for the people playing at home on those Sunday night groups who don't want to focus on the game, who don't want to really get into the nitty gritty of what my strategy is, who don't really care if it takes 5 minutes because actually they haven't been paying attention to the game for 10 minutes because they're talking about, I don't know what's good recently. You know, the Mahomes losing a Super Bowl. Hooray. You know, it doesn't really matter what it is. And
or
I think
they got up to get the other slices of pizza, you know, like.
Exactly. There's tons of reasons. And so my insistence on this comes primarily from two things. One, I get incredibly bored when my activity isn't activitying. And two, I used to be a judge. And
That's right. I forget this about you.
I used to be a fairly active judge in the city, and one of the first things I tell all my players and all my player meetings is that in order, I expect a fair, fast, and fun time. I expect it to be fair first and foremost because that's what my job as a judge is. Right. But my second job as a judge is to make sure that we're not in the hall past when the hall's closing.
Right.
And after that, it's to make sure everybody has a fun time. So as long as I get those first two down, we can get the third one really easily.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a little bit of that is bled over into how I interact and play Commander. So don't get me wrong, I think it's a fairly narrow way that I am talking about, but I also think it's the most generally applicable way to play the game.
Well, hell yeah, buddy. Wait, you are so good at talking, man. It's crazy.
you and every teacher I had in university.
I mean, look, I'll tell you, look, we both do talking for a living, but it's just funny to be like, yeah, my kind of talking is I talk about farts, and then you're like, now here's the thing, and you're very, you could be a politician. I'd vote for you, easy.
Oh, please don't let that go to my head. I specifically left the country so I wouldn't be eligible for any of that.
Yeah, you're an American in Canada. That's right. You can't. Can you not? No, you can. Yeah.
By the time this comes out, I'll at least be getting close to citizenship at this point. But yeah, okay. No, you gotta be a citizen to do anything really.
That's right. That makes sense. Well, look at you go, buddy. Close to city. Well, hopefully soon. That's soon. Coming. Soon.
Yeah, that's the vibe. That's the vibe.
I guess let's kick it back to Morgan and I in the booth and see if Alex from the Spike Feeders is the bolus. But I think I've tipped my hand pretty heavy in this chat to say, well, you'll see. All right.
Yeah, well, thanks Alex, again for having me on, Mike.
Oh, buddy, it's truly always a pleasure to chat with you, honestly. Can you tell folks where you want them to follow you, what you want them checking out? I know we said the Spike Feeders, obviously, spikefeeders.com, if I'm not mistaken, is like the website.
Spikefeeders.com if you want to get up on those dice, if you want to look at some of the other stuff we've got. By the time this comes out, we might have several more things. So if you haven't looked at the shop recently, I would recommend it. Also would just recommend patreon.com/thespikefeeders. I probably mentioned it earlier in the episode, but currently we put out 6 episodes a month of in-person, high-quality, multi-camera PvP commander action from Jim's basement. But if you're a patron at the $10 level or above with us, you get a secret bonus episode just for y'all. So if you haven't checked out those things, I'd strongly recommend it. But I also want to recommend that you check out whatever local volunteer organizations are in your area. Everyone always needs help. Everyone can always do help. See how you can help.
Hell of a message, buddy. Thank you so much for chatting with us. And we're going to chat with Morgan on the other side. Well, that was supposed to play the theme song. There it is. What a delight to chat with Alex. I know it's a bummer to not have Morgan here today because, you know, we're going to talk about the topic, but it's also a great topic to talk about. I think that Morgan would have had some insights for this one. I'm going to ask her to maybe have something next week or next episode for us to talk about on this one specifically, because I really like this topic. The idea that you're playing a game, get your eyes on the board and have an idea. And I'm fully supportive of Alex's pet peeve. I think it's correct. He's not saying don't play slow. Slow playing is fine to an extent, but just be present and ready to interact with the game. And I can't agree more. Not the bolus, Alex. Spike Feeder Alex, the voice of gold. Golden voice boy from friggin' Iowa to Winnipeg. Thank you so much for calling in again. Thanks so much for having a chat with me, taking the time out of your day twice to do this. So it means a lot. And before I let you guys go, and by no means are you my hostage to let go. You guys can stop this at any point. I do want to talk about Final Fantasy. I have been pleasantly surprised by so many of these designs. And I got to say, I have no idea about the game references at all. I know nothing about Final Fantasy. All I know is that some of these designs are bananas. Obviously, Vivi Ornithyr is a big one, one that is making waves even in the CDH community. You know, you've got the Bant Choco, Seeker of Paradise. It's also been very popular, but I cannot stop thinking about Zidane Tantalus Thief. And so this is from Final Fantasy IV. Zidane is a 3-red-white, 3/3 human mutant scout, and obviously legendary. When Zidane enters, gain control of target creature and opponent controls until end of turn, untap it, it gains lifelink and haste until end of turn, and whenever an opponent gains control of a permanent from you, you create a treasure token. This reminds me of when I had a Brian Stoutarm deck and I had a couple threatened effects in there and I thought that's pretty cool. But Zidane just like opens it up a little bit more to some group slug effects. You know, you're going to give your opponents resources so they can get their heavy hitters on the board or pump them up with counters or something, make sure that they don't come your way with a ghostly prison or something like that. And then you get to take it over. You get to blink Zidane and gain control of the creature. Maybe you've got an Eldrazi Displacer, so you can blink it during combat and have a new blocker, gain that lifelink, and kill the attacking creature, send your blocker back to your opponent, and make a treasure out of the deal. Just a wild commander, and it's just an uncommon. And this is what I'm talking about. Final Fantasy might be a beloved game franchise for many decades, and a game franchise that I for all intents and purposes, just don't interact with at all. But these designs are definitely inspired by these game mechanics, I'm sure, or something about Final Fantasy inspired these incredibly strange designs that I find absolutely fascinating. Adventurelands, for one, you can cast a sorcery on adventure and then play your land. Crazy push on these designs. I can't get over, you know, how there are flip cards that are just interesting and weird. You've got creatures that turn into sagas and then back into creatures. There's that mythic Sephiroth, fabled soldier. I don't know why soldier is all caps. I guess it's a flavor thing, but like, it's a titan. So for two and a black, you get a 3/3 human avatar soldier, Sephiroth. Whenever it enters or attacks, you may sacrifice another creature if you do draw a card. And whenever another creature dies, not just your creature, you get a Blood Artist effect. Target opponent loses one life and you gain a life. But if this is the fourth time this ability has resolved this turn, you transform Sephiroth into a 5/5 flyer that, when it transforms, gives you an emblem. Emblems are usually like planeswalkers. I think this is like what maybe the second time we've seen an emblem on a creature, I want to say. And that's got to be something, right? I can't imagine that being something that we've seen often. I know that we see them with the flip walkers, of course, but then the only other one I could think of is the Capitoline Triad in Assassin's Creed that gives you an emblem when you exile historic cards from your graveyard with cumulative mana cost 30 or more, and then your creatures are all 9/9s. This is the second creature in Magic's history to grant you an emblem. And frankly, as an Aristocrats champ over here, that's an easy, easy flip condition. So sick. Then, of course, whenever it attacks in the air as a 5/5, you can sacrifice any number of other creatures and draw that many cards. This is a beater. This is insane. This is a card that I'm seeing pre-ordering at over $75 USD. Just a bonkers, brutal card, and I cannot wait to get as many copies as I could afford without going too crazy. Just a wild card. You've got like Ishtolta Rule, the mono blue cat druid for 6 mana that says at the beginning of your end step, exile target creature you control and return it to the battlefield under its owner's control. So of course it's not like a Conjurer's Closet situation where you get to keep a creature if you've threatened it, but it also gives you an additional end step, which, as somebody who built the whole Grixis upkeep deck, this is kind of a first step in that direction for end step triggers. So obviously, Agent of Treachery fans are delighted to hear about it. You've got Kefka, Court Mage, the Grixis Weirdo, just so many interesting designs. And while I am not excited about Final Fantasy per se, I am thrilled to see the love and work that went into this set. And I have to say, I thought I was ready to skip this one entirely. And I say that a lot recently because Magic has become quite expensive as a hobby. But man, these cards are very cool. And I hope to pick some up real cheap. And where am I going to do that? But cardsphere.com, baby. I've got some credit on there, burning a hole through my Cardsphere pocket. So I'm really just excited to take a look at that once Final Fantasy cards are up and ready to be traded, because I'm going to need a lot of them. That does it for me. I think I hope you got a lot of what you wanted out of today's episode. A great guest, awesome chat about a pet peeve that I wholeheartedly endorse. If you're going to play Magic, get into it, be present, have some fun. It's a game, baby. Shout out to Morgan Sanchez, a.k.a. Indigo Gentleman on Blue Sky. Again, the show is on Blue Sky at Am I the Bullcast, at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza. Very easy to find. Tell me what you think about the Callous Dalboy albums, Dalboy's album, if you listen to it. Send me your stories at amithebullis@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. And hopefully we'll have a new shakeup to the format of the show to get it to you weekly. A little bit more me, let's say, I think. I'm excited about taking this long look at the show and kind of retooling it. I'm looking forward to seeing us grow with each other, and I really appreciate all the listeners. Tell a friend if you like the show. Let us know if you like the show. If you don't like the show, don't be a dick about it. That's all I got to say. All right, Ken, you don't got to bleep that last one. I think let them know. Let them know what I'm saying. Okay. Good night. Scoot the day. Bye.